All right, good morning again, everybody. I think you all know who I am by now, but as a reminder, Millie, the Business Programs Coordinator for the American Home Brewers Association. Quick reminder to, again, when you go into the HomebrewCon app and you click on this or you touch the session, at the very bottom, you can hit rate this session. So if you haven't done that already, please do that because we really value your feedback. So, and again, I know that you all probably noticed that there was a change in the schedule. These gentlemen next to me so graciously volunteered their time to do a Q&A with you guys this morning. So I'm going to do some introductions, and then we'll talk about some of the guidelines for the meeting and then allow them to talk a little bit about what they're doing. So let's start with Brian Johnson. We have here. He's going to be moderating the panel today. So Brian is the president and the second generation of a second generation family-owned Great Fermentations. He might have been born and raised in Indianapolis, but he got his love for craft beer and brewing in Denver, Colorado. So he decided to trade in the suit and tie in the corporate world for a t-shirt and running his homebrew shop. Brian lives in Indianapolis now with his lovely wife and two sons and his loyal and adorable puppy, Harshi. He loves to challenge his customers to brew outside the box and to make what they love and not what the traditional style tells them to. So, and next we have Chris Opella with Brewmaster Wholesale. He's the sales manager for Brewmaster, wholesale supplier of beer and wine supplies. He's been homebrewing and working in the industry for almost 25 years. Chris is on the retailer subcommittee of the AHA and was previously a board member of multiple homebrew and homebrew industry trade associations. He's a certified BJCP judge, and occasionally he teaches homebrewing classes for a local city program. Next, we have Chris Manzi to my right. Chris Manzi is a new addition to the team at Country Malt as the product manager for the homebrew team. He previously served as the general manager and the lead mopper at the AHA's inaugural homebrew shop of the year, The Home Brewer, in San Diego, California. And he has over 10 years of homebrewing experience and is a certified Cicerone. Next, we have David Stewart in the middle here. David Stewart is the national sales manager for LD Carlson, the United States' largest wholesale distributor of home beer and winemaking products. He has been in the beverage industry 35 years in a variety of capacities. His initial entry into the world of adult beverages started as work as a regional territory and product manager in the wine and spirit import business. And he has been in his current role as the national sales manager with LD Carlson for 19 years. And lastly, we have Mike Brennan here on the end with BSG Handcraft. Mike is the Western U.S. and British Columbia Territory Technical Sales Manager for BSG Handcraft and Distillation Divisions. He holds a BS in Cell and Molecular Biology and has been an avid fermentationist for over 22 years. He serves as the District NorCal Membership Coordinator for the NBAA. He sits on the AHA National Competition Subcommittee and has coordinated the NHC first-round judging site in Northern California from 2014 to 2018. He's also a BJCP National Judge, Mead Endorsed, and a Judge Trainer. Mike has also worked in homebrew shop marketing at Pico Brew Technical Sales before joining BSG in 2018. So I'm going to hand it over to Brian, and he's going to get us started.
How's everybody doing this morning? Are we feeling nice and spry after homebrew club night? 3 nights in a row of drinking. So I'm the moderator today, and what we're going to do is we're going to have each of these guys introduce themselves, their companies, and kind of what they're working on. And then we're honestly just going to open it up to everybody here to talk to them. I mean, this is a chance for all of us here, is probably most of us homebrew shop owners, to actually talk to what's probably one of our suppliers or more of our suppliers, because this is, I think, representing the 4 main suppliers here in the country. So I urge you guys to come up with questions, ask away, get some answers. Now, on that topic of questions, there's some fun stuff we would like to talk about, but we can't talk about, and I'll go through that. We cannot discuss prices, pricing procedures, margins, what constitutes a fair profit level, changes in or stabilization of prices, terms or conditions of sale, pricing practices of any industry member, forecast of price increase or decreases, specific credit terms, discounts, rebates, freight allowances. Do I have to read it word for word? Okay. Anything fun we can't talk about, basically. So, but no, there's a lot of good things we could talk about outside of this, but let's just try to stay away from that. If I hear us getting into that, I'll probably jump in here and stop it. But let's have some fun this morning. So I think I'm going to put you on the spot because you're right to my left. All right. So I'll let Chris kick things off, and we'll go from there. Thanks.
All right. Good morning, everybody. I think like we need a icebreaker or something like that, but we'll keep it easy. We're looking at what can homebrew shops do to make a difference, and sort of what is the new stuff that we're looking at. And from what I see, the interesting stuff that I've been doing and talking to homebrew shops about is the products to look at. I do a lot of looking at reporting on new products that we've been carrying, looking at sales on new products, looking at categories, which categories have been increasing more than others, not just in total dollar sales, but in year-over-year growth. And it's probably not telling you too much to say that a lot of the electric systems have really been popular and have been changing sort of how brewers have been brewing. As we know from the saw in the State of the Industry and Bart Watson's talk, people are better employed, people have more money, and people have less time. And so focusing on things that make the brewing experience better and easier is, I think, something that's more important than, you know, years ago the watchword was brewing can save you money, and that's not what people are looking for anymore. And so I like to focus on things like, electric all-grain systems, draft supplies, kegerators. In addition to homebrewers, we're seeing lots more beer drinkers, as some homebrewers are slowing down on the brewing and moving more to just buying craft. Plus, there's a lot of just craft beer drinkers that are out there, and the draft supplies, faucets, all of that has been increasing, for us at least, at a much higher rate than the other supplies and kind of the core, what I call the staples of homebrew shops, carboys and buckets and that kind of stuff. So those are definitely interesting. If you're not doing CO2 exchanges and refills in your shop, because I see shops that do both, then you absolutely have to do that. CO2 has been phenomenal for a lot of shops that I talk to. It gets local bars in addition to home brewers, so have 5-pounders and 20-pounders. Huge margins in it. It's easy to do. It gets people coming in. So look at some of the categories that you're seeing growth in. Look at what the trends in the industry are and pick that up and save your customers time. We want to help them have fun. And also with that, just the services that you can do for them. Like CO2 is something that can't be outsourced. You can't mail order a filled CO2 tank or an exchange. Events that you do in your shop. You know, we've been talking in the industry things for years about building that community, bringing people into the shop, doing bottle shares, and look at ways that you can get them in your store and provide a service that they can't get online or they can't get from somewhere else. Because your people in your area, they want to come to your shop. They want to talk about their latest batch. They want to look over tips and tricks and talk with other people. And so giving them that community, it's a different experience that they just can't get elsewhere. And that's going to keep them coming into your stores. So pass it on to Chris.
Well, really mirroring a lot of what Chris said, it's definitely, the industry's been changing. We're seeing a lot of growth in, like you said, all-in-one electric. And just every region has big differences in what their audience and their community is looking for. And I definitely see some trends as far as people becoming reactive to what they need to build their community. So you kind of took a lot of my points there as well. But, doing classes, we found that classes, local events, engaging your communities and your clubs is a very important part of keeping yourself relevant in your area. speaking a little bit about what we're doing at Country Malt, I'm the new product manager. It's a role that we haven't had here at Country Malt, and you guys probably know us as Brewcraft, but we've just recently transitioned into being one company as Country Malt itself. So trying to take a look at what is relevant, what is going to keep homebrew shops afloat for the next 10, 15 years and into the future. I think a lot of what he said with draft supplies, all-in-one electric systems, local and craft maltsters, and that's really where I see, you know, trends going for the next couple years. So that's about it that I got to say.
Good morning. Just one thing, Brian, you said the margin word, so we're just going to...
Is that okay? I said the margin word.
So there's all kinds of ways you could open up with a talk about it. It could be an hour. It could be 2 minutes. I think looking around the room, seeing all the retailers, I would say congratulate yourself for coming to this. One thing as wholesalers we've noticed is less and less retailers are coming as we're in a down market. You know, resources are tight. But what can set you apart is effort, applying yourself, knowing your business. So if you're coming to this in a down market, you're making that effort, you're improving your knowledge, and you're networking. And this conference really supplies a lot of networking. I think, you know, just 2 seconds on the show, I don't know about the rest of the suppliers, but for having less attendees, we've been the busiest we've been at the booth. It hasn't been in years. And it hasn't been in New England in 28 years. So that predates me. I've, you know, not experienced one in New England. So I think we're seeing a lot of locals, a lot of first-timers, and I think doing it in the Southeast next year is going to be great. So whereas that may seem like a little thing, when you look at the big picture, that's good. That rises boats. You may be in a different part of the country, but if New England and the Southeast and places that haven't had any kind of massive stimulation like this, I think that's a positive thing. So if you look at where the industry is now, when I got in was at a really low point. So it was the late 90s, and I know we've all taken hits. You know, the wholesalers are down on the beer making side of homebrew. Retailers are as well. We're seeing less retailers, but compared to the late 90s, this isn't as bad. I think what we've seen in 40 years at LD Carlson is you have up, down cycles. We're just coming off one of the largest upswing. It was a lot more years, and we're probably going to settle into a little larger downswing as well for different factors. I think what the economist said the other day on the opening remarks was pretty accurate. We see that a recession is good for business, and a full employment and money isn't necessarily as good for business. But what the Chris has said was the higher end, you know, equipment. So you may not be selling as many extracts. You know, we've seen 20 years ago extract with 90% of the recipes you guys were putting out of your stores. Now it's about probably 45.
It was down 44%.
44. Yeah. So near the here and near there, to use the M word, you may make the same, you know, percent, but there's more money in extract. But that's going away. I mean, we're seeing our Brewer's Best kits continue to do well, but we're seeing single can sales, like that extract brewer putting a recipe together. I don't think that exists much at all. We're seeing people in their, you know, 5, 10 years ago, instead of waiting 3 or 4 years to get into all grain, we were seeing people get in after 2 or 3 batches. They learn extract. They got right into it. Now we have guys 25 years old who start off just on electric brew system. So it's changing how you have to approach the market, but you adapt. And the other thing we see that's helped a lot of you is diversification. So I know this is a beer conference, but we still see the wine side of our business very strong. It still has growth. It may not be the 20% growth that the homebrew had 4 or 5 years ago over a year, but it's steady and you don't see it drop. So a lot of you have already diversified into that. Some people are putting in breweries, they're putting in wineries, they're putting in craft bottle sales. It's really just, you know, surviving in your market. So But it's still what we have found over 40 years is there's always going to be a floor. So homebrew is not going to go away. So if you're the ones that are here, if you're the ones that are really promoting it, doing a good job in your store, despite the market conditions, there will always be market. It just depends on how much at any given period of time. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. So at BSG, you know, like you've heard from Chris and Dave, in terms of what has happened in the market, you all know that your total available market has shrunk in homebrew. We have all seen that. And as you do that, it's important that you think about what your customers look like, that they looked like a few years ago, and what your customers look like now, and think about what your customers are going to look like in the future. We had a discussion within my team a few days ago about how we see, you know, our demographic, and we think about it in terms of having our traditional demographic, a lot of what we think about who attends HomebrewCon right now, what I will call it the mature brewer, people in our age range who have been brewing a long time just, you know, this has been their hobby. Thinking about how many of these people have left the hobby, there was a period of time where I thought, well, they're done, they're gone. And it's important for us to think about these are people, maybe things have gotten busy in their life, like we talked about a little bit, you know, in terms of career or family. And they're people who will come back to the hobby. I do believe that. The new generation, if you want to consider it that, I know it's kind of fun to say that, you know, none of us understand the next generation. But this next generation is truly a generation that fundamentally sees things differently in terms of how they connect in their experience. For us, you know, I think a lot of us, homebrewing is an identity. You know, we call ourselves, I'm a craft beer guy, I'm a home brewer, I'm a whatever. We actually use it as an identity term. And with the younger demographic, their whole world is shaped now by social media and interaction. And most importantly, what I want you to hear is shared experience. And I think Chris mentioned experience. And it's important that we think about that. It's not a generation that sees themselves and says, I'm a home brewer. They see themselves as, oh, I do these things, I engage with my friends, and I also homebrew. So how will you help them, how will you help shape your homebrew approach in bringing those new customer acquisition opportunities in through some kind of an engagement that makes it a shared experience? So obviously, I mean, we bang on that term social media presence all the time, but you do have to realize that that is how you're going to reach your new customers. I know it's difficult to think that everybody needs to do online sales. I don't. I think it's important that you have that physical presence, because having that interactive experience is what built a lot of us into our community, and these people are also going to want to connect, but they are going to want to connect in terms of convenience. So one of the things I want to make sure that you are all thinking about is how do you find that you reach out to us. You know, we have marketing departments. We have reps in the field. We're actually out, you know, we're knocking on your doors. You see us at your stores. And sharing what you see is so important for us. I think Chris said it from Country Malt Group, is there's no national picture. There's a national overall, you know, aggregate picture. But each of us in each of your regions sees a different market. So I'm in the Pacific Northwest. Things there at the homebrew shops are doing differently than they are out here in New England. So speaking to your reps and saying, hey, this is what I'm seeing with my customers. This is how I'm seeing the engagement. Sharing it with us. It's one of those things. How can we help you? We need to hear from you. The more you're communicating with us is important. David said, you know, a rising tide floats all boats. When you share your observations, it helps us with ideas of, how can we package differently for you? How can we maybe bring some items together and make a different way to present it to your customers? And, you know, we have those resources, and we have to help you find a way to make this more convenient, more engaging for your customers. So, there you
go. This question? Yeah, we can open up for Q&A now if anybody's ready to go.
Hey guys, thank you for coming here. I realize this is like a short notice sort of thing, change to the program. I think this is a great thing to have like every year. I think this is like the one time a year we get a chance to talk to each other face to face. One of the things we're working on in our shop is we're trying to diversify our customer base. And we get a lot of what we would, for our business, consider non-traditional customers coming in asking about kombucha. So, you know, young women, we have Mennonites, Old Order Brethren coming in, you know, folks that wouldn't normally come into a homebrew store, and they're asking for kombucha supplies. Now, we can handle a lot of this stuff, but what they're looking for a lot of times is a large glass jug, like a carboy, but with a spigot in the bottom, with a wide mouth so they can get in there and clean. I can't find anything like that. And most of them aren't willing to step up to like a stainless steel type, you know, fermenter. So I know traditionally a lot of folks use Crocs and stuff like that, but where are we finding that these days? And I'm not saying, I don't know if this would be something that would be worthwhile for you to add to your product line, but I'd certainly buy a few.
We used to sell glass demijohns that were drilled for spigots, and they were a pain in the butt. The company would have a hard time drilling them and would break a lot of them, and in shipping, you've got a weak point right there. And so we had a lot of damage. We had, I think, a 9-gallon demijohn with it. So somebody's got to come up with a better package or a thicker, you know, a carboy that can do it. He was talking about people wanting kombucha specifically and wanting large glass vessels with spigots, that not wanting to, or ceramic, excuse me, and Crocs and things, not wanting to go up to stainless steel. Somebody's got to make it, and there's got to be enough to buy it.
You can go to True Brands, and they have a great 2-gallon jug with a big lid on the top of it and a plastic spigot. And they're reasonable. They ship them to us all day long. So it's called True Brands. If you wanna, yeah. The other suggestion is the little for the brew buckets from SS Brewtech. Any of those little brew buckets, professional or commercial kombucha makers use those, and they're great for kombucha.
And one thing I will comment on, and someone checked me, but I don't know if you want to suggest using plastic to people making kombucha, because the acidity of the kombucha environment tends to erode the plastic. And I think even ceramic can be challenged. I think it's glass and stainless that you want to push people towards.
Yeah. So it's available, and it's easy to get. Yeah.
I mean, and yeah.
I think that actually reinforces that point of communicating with us these things. You know, we obviously, you see our catalogs, our resource guides, our websites. I don't think about it as a one-way flow that we put a catalog out, we just assume this is what you want. It's so important that you communicate with us regularly and say, this is what my customers are asking for. You bring up kombucha, you know, there was actually 2018, Millie can tell us probably who went out there from AHA, but there was a kombucha con in Southern California. Bob Peace went and spoke at it, keynoted it. So that's how rapidly that market is growing on another product that, you know, a lot of us were just kind of thinking was novel 4 or 5 years ago, and now it's rapidly gaining momentum, right?
Just real quick on that. Kombucha, we see food fermentation. So I think other things, like you said, to get people into the store. If you have ideas, let us know, because I always say we hear things in volume. So if 2 out of 500 stores want an item, it's probably not worth sourcing. But if we hear it again and again, and I know sometimes you may think it falls on deaf ears, but drop an email. You know, if you're talking to us, let us know. Just because we don't immediately come out with the product 2 months later doesn't mean we're not considering it and looking for sourcing. And I think with Crocs, that was a good example for us. With the food fermentation and sauerkraut or maybe even kombucha, we found a source for Crocs to be able to distribute them nationally. The problem was they couldn't even fill our opening order. So we want to be able to go to market and have product and not run out. So you have to see from our standpoint as wholesalers, you know, we may want to do something, but to Chris's point, there may not be a glass spigot that works, that's economical, that you can find. But it doesn't mean we don't hear you. We want to be able to come out with these things. And it's usually better when we get your input, because if we just make it up ourselves, sometimes it flies and sometimes it doesn't.
Good morning. Good morning. I'd like your take on the electric or the one and all appliance brewers, brew equipment, and where you think that market's going in the next 3 to 5 years.
Did you guys hear that question back there?
Yeah, you guys.
Okay.
So yes, I definitely see that there's huge growth in that market. Right now, I feel like there are a lot of Me Too products out there that are basically copycats of the ones that were really first to market. But we're definitely seeing big growth in the lower end of that market as well, where you're seeing price points up at, you know, retailing at $1,000, and now you're seeing some come in at that $400 or $500 range. You're seeing some come in at that more $400 or $500 range and even lower. I do see that the consumers are starting to weed out the products that they want and build in the features that they want, or starting to ask for that. So there's some room for that, some room for growth in that segment. I still see a lot of people that are very interested in it, especially as we're talking about people kind of moving away from the hobby because they get too busy, and then coming back to it because of these sorts of systems. So there's definitely a long roadmap still with this. New products coming out, new features being added in.
You know, as we, those electric brewing systems, obviously, you know, I worked for Pico Brew. We were kind of the ones who started off with that kind of crazy reapproach, although that's an automated system, not just all electric. But as we see, it came up then as these other systems. If you think about that, we're back to the demographic talk with younger brewers, people with more disposable income, like, you know, Chris Opala said, that these are also people living in a little more population-dense areas. They're living in apartments. You know, you think about, like, Silicon Valley over on the west side, you know, western United States. People are living in small spaces. They don't have as much garage space. And they also that go out and spend the day in the in front of the garage brewing or in the backyard isn't necessarily part of it. So that small, compact system, which also allows them to do some other things. I mean, you can do a lobster boil in there or something like that. It actually is something that does something else besides just homebrew. You know, and I think it's important you think about that. Obviously, it was before my time, but BSG thought about it clearly, and that's why they ended up purchasing Bevy down in New Zealand, which is grandfather. That's the investment that and the vision investment that BSG saw was that this is a significant part of the market that's coming around. So it's not just traditional. You still have that opportunity for traditional brewing, but it's also this newer way to bring people indoors and maybe in an easier way to do it. And I'm kind of happy not to lug propane tanks around anymore myself. So,
and look at kits with these electric all grain systems. We've been thinking about doing a starter kit. You know, we have starter kits with buckets and cappers, but we've been thinking about doing a starter kit that includes an electric all grain system. And make sure to show your customers these. Do demos with these. I've talked to a number of people here at the show that are clearly nutso homebrewers and paid a lot to come here, but aren't familiar with the concept on how these work. And so just showing it to them and demonstrating it shows me that there's still a lack of a general understanding. You can't get it quite as much as a 5-gallon pot that you boil stuff in. So make sure to do some demos and put some information out there and look at bundling it, because somebody's going to buy a $1,000 starter kit, you know, or $1,500 starter kit with all of the stuff that they need in there. There's a market for that now, where that used to be way too expensive for people to get into it, but the game has changed somewhat.
It sounds like we already talked about it, but I'd like to reaffirm what the first gentleman said about the large glass fermenter with a stainless spigot. Our customers are asking for it too.
I think we all made notes about okay. this when you guys said it.
We'll have about 100 more of you.
Yeah.
And I will add to it, if it's kombucha, it needs to have a large opening at the top.
Yes.
You can't get your SCOBY out of a carboy.
Right.
So.
In my town, there's a few breweries that are very proud to organize bulk buys straight to the home brewer. I've heard some conflicting information. What exactly is the policy on that? Does that make sense?
to clarify your question, you're asking if homebrewers can come directly to us and buy?
The breweries order straight from you guys, yes. Straight for the homebrewer as a bulk buy, and then the breweries disperse it out to the homebrewer?
I think the question is, I mean, I don't know if we're talking about pricing right now. I think the question is, as wholesalers, what is the policy on allowing breweries to do bulk buys for your homebrew customers? I think that's kind of the question. If you know that they're doing that.
I would say breweries, I'm not so sure. I mean, I think the breweries, yeah. So you know, it's not something we've seen recently. Right? No. I've known the concept for 20 years. We saw a lot of it in like the late 90s, early 2000s. Every brewer was selling out the back door. Homebrew shops were really struggling because all they were selling was priming sugar and caps. So how you police it, I don't know. I mean, we've never sold direct to a club or anything like that. So we don't have that experience. But it certainly doesn't hurt to let your distributor know if a brewery near you is doing it. Because, again, you have two. That's significant. So we saw it back in the late 90s, early 2000s. We would go to the brewery and say, hey, you know, on behalf of the retailers, you're going to put them out of business. And then, you know, it's a community that lives together. And you can't tell them not to do it, but you can certainly try to influence them not to do it. Because it doesn't make sense, and there's a certain amount of homebrewers that they don't care. But what I have seen is some stores do their own bulk buys, you know, once a quarter, twice a year, where they sell it at a certain price, but it's come in and get it that weekend or that week. It's coming and getting gone, and what that does is maybe you don't see them as often, but you capture, you know, the grain closets full of grain from your store and not, you know, out the back door of a brewery. I mean, it's not just grain. Breweries are going to give them slurries of yeast and, you know, if they have a hop that they're heavy on. So it's good to get an update on that.
I'll add one comment to it. So being a second generation owner, my mom went through what David just talked about, and her response to that, and we still do it to this day, is a yearly, we call it the Great Grain Sale, and we sell grain at super cheap. What we've determined is there's just some of those homebrewers that they are going to wait till the grain is the cheapest possible, and they'll buy literally a crap ton of it. And so her response was have this sale once a year to attract those people and to win that sale. So it's... You're not going to defend it 100%, but it's an idea because there are people that will buy in bulk and they'll wait, and so you might as well get that sale even though it may not be as much as you would normally get.
And it may be worth it, too, talking to your customers about this. Customers that do this kind of stuff, homebrewers, they don't often recognize that they are hurting the shop. We see, I think it's from the AHA General Membership Survey that says that homebrewers typically shop at, I don't know, an average of how many, two to three, you know, maybe two locals and online. And so everybody looks around a little bit, and they don't recognize what it does to the shop and how important it is to bring it in there. So however you can have that conversation with them and remind them that, hey, you know, we want to help you guys out, and I like the idea of a shop, you know, getting in on that action too, because we all know that some brewers are just going to find the cheapest thing that they can. But I genuinely think that these guys, when they're buying from a brewery, they don't recognize they're displacing a sale from your store, and they're not trying to hurt you. They're just trying to get stuff a little bit cheaper. So part of when you have them in your store, you can make them a part of the family, tell them that this is a cumulative effort that we're all working in together, and there's probably some argument for having them respect you and wanting to push that through your store.
Building on what Chris and Brian just said, is also Is there a way you can turn this into an opportunity with your clubs with a loyalty program of some sort? I know I've spoken to several shops who have, you know, they either track sales and either do something for that club at the, you know, say like you guys did the annuals, you know, the grain sale. Is there something you can do to engage that club more with your shop to help them understand what it means to your business and building that community loyalty? So it's not just, you know, as a shop, especially as a homebrew shop, it's not just a transactional purchase like it is at, you know, a regular store. It's community purchase, and you are part of a culture. And capitalizing on that culture is, you know, by engaging them and saying, can we build something with your club to keep you in here? And like you guys said, some people are just always going to look for, you know, that extra nickel off of a bag of grain.
They're trying to save money. So when we want to try as a home or as a homebrew shop owner, we're trying to get into the electric systems. It's a big investment on our part to bring that hardware in. Have you thought about doing an initial, I guess, a display kit or something for the homebrew shop that doesn't cost us an arm and a leg, so we can get started with it? Wait, are you with Pico Brew?
I used to be with Pico
Brew.
Yeah.
I'm in Seattle, and I wanted to bring them in. So I've known, the three guys that started it?
Yep.
And I wasn't going to pay, you know, $1,700 to bring the first one in and then let it sit on a shelf.
Yeah, Pico Brew's original model for the Zymatic was to have shops buy a demo model, but you know, it was still a cost to entry. I think it was... I categorize that separately because Pico Brew at that time was a startup, so mm-hmm. I don't think that they had that capital to be able to put out, say, you know, I know we had discussed, like, well, what if we could build a non-functional unit, something that just the display screen comes on, looks pretty. It does bring up that point, though. You do have to actively use these devices. A brew kettle sitting there without it being turned on is just a big giant coffee pot. So you really have to turn it on and have it going.
Here at the meeting, I've talked to Spike. Who else is here? Brewmaster. You know, all the different that have the nice three-vessel systems. But only one has said, hey, we may do something up front so you can have a display unit. The others, it's kind of full price. Bring it in. And if you sell it, you sell it. If not, you don't.
I have looked at this a little bit, and again, I absolutely respect the question, and I'm going to tell you why we can't do it. It would cost as much to bring in a non-functional unit has the same package and the same outside.
I'd rather have a functional one, and I can sell it to that first customer, but give us a break on that first one.
There may be room, and that you can always talk to your supplier about, because they would have to work out anything individually with that. I've looked at making demo units or taking, you know, if we have returns, can we give that away mm-hmm. as a free unit? But then there's always issues. Okay, well, maybe we had a return, we get a credit from our supplier, and then we can't double dip and sell it, or it's an older model, or you know, we want to have the newest one that's out there. Mm-hmm. I've looked at a few various ways to do this. Can I go dig through our pallets of, you know, returns and defective and grab stuff and give it to somebody or put it out there? And it's just there's a number of sort of logistical difficulties with it, with inventorying it, with it, whether or not it's been written off or not. Is that the most current model? How do we actually put it out there? Do we create a SKU on the website? So there's a lot of stuff with that. What I do like is a functional model with some kind of a demo program discount or something. But that's the type of thing that is you'd have to work out with anybody individually.
Yeah. Maybe do a traveling show. You guys bring a system to just pick shops and bring it. You bring the stuff, do the demo for our customers, and then see how many we sell.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Anyway, because we will bring electric systems in. It's just, it's a big investment. Yeah. Thanks.
Can you guys talk a little bit about, and it's related to the all-in-one systems, but it's how do you make it a little bit more easier, simpler? You know, I'm thinking of like the... all these sort of Internet of Things devices that people can use to kind of help them, you know, just brew a better beer. Do you see, can you talk a little bit about the trends there? So I'm talking about, like, you know, these are devices that have, you know, the Bluetooth, and they'll give you, you know, how's your fermentation going, you know, be able to kind of give people some information about, you know, how their brewing is going.
So I think I understand you saying, you know, what's the, how does this engage your customers more? I think you just hit the nail on the head of what we, you know, I talked about at the beginning of, you know, that younger demographic. I know I keep sounding like the old guy who keeps talking about the kids, but really, truly, they're app-driven people. If your device has an app, or you can monitor, like, you know, tilt for the tilt hydrometer, the what's the new one I just saw the other day up here? Play-Doh, the Play-Doh fermentation monitor. I came from, you know, an IoT company where you can do everything online. The Grainfather has an, it's app-driven. It's an easily relatable platform for folks, and there is something kind of satisfying when you're at work. You can actually see what your gravity is at home of your fermenter. I kind of like that myself. So I think about how can you turn this into something for your shop, which is the excitement of engagement with your hobby. You know, rather than it just being the Saturday hobby, and then a week later you go check the closet and see if something's going on in your, you know, if you still see bubbles in your airlock, this is a different experience for them to say, oh, look, I'm doing this right now. If you, I'm not a Facebook guy at all, but you go on Facebook and people are posting, you know, every moment of their lives and what they had for dinner. It's the same idea. You can post and say, hey, look where things are at, and you know, look what's going on with my beer or whatever. Great. Let's help them find ways to engage with their shared experience. There's that key term again.
So one thing that I've noticed at this conference over the past few years is, you know, 3-4 years ago, you saw a lot of companies that came out with, you know, they were on display with their little Raspberry Pis and a bunch of different sensors, and it was a very DIY feel, where now it's started to move to a lot more sophisticated products coming out, people actually developing better packaging, better branding. So there's a level of growth in that, in this industry, that I feel like is just on the upswing. I fully expect within the next few years to see a lot more connection into those all-in-one systems, into, you know, being able to just build something on your computer, have it download right to your machine, let it run it for you, monitor it, put it back out there so you can kind of, as you said, kind of share with your friends. I just feel like it's a very early phase for that in this industry, but I do like seeing that level of sophistication starting to come to the products that are out there, and I fully imagine to see more growth in that over the next couple of years.
And some of these products are, because they're new, they don't lend themselves to the distributor model as well. You know, Play-Doh, they have a sign that they're now live on Kickstarter. You know, there's no piece of it for us or for you guys in there. So it has to be big enough, and sometimes you just throw something at the wall and see if it sticks. You know, if anybody wants some beer bugs, I've got a good price on them for you. We got, you know, some of these are there. It is getting new, and we absolutely, you know, want to see where these can go. Some of it needs to, in order for our model to work too, you're talking to distributors that have to, you know, to bring it in and know which ones to buy and stuff like that. It's we're learning it as you guys are as well.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to add that I think the sharing piece is really critical, because I think that's the community piece that they like to share how they're doing. But also I think just making it, you know, more convenient. I think that, you know, because it's limited time, and, you know, if they can make a better beer, you know, and not have to worry about, you know, if you can remove some of the factors out of there. But if we can't find, like, those products, and we've got to go do all the searching, I mean, it is a little bit of a, you know, throwing the dice out there. So, yeah, if you guys see something that's kind of interesting, that'd be great to let us know.
Yeah, so I think there's a question that I had here. and you're kind of hitting the nail on the head there. We're seeing all these one-off products come out that are solving one thing, and they're usually technology-driven. However, with the internet, it's the direct-to-consumer model. And before, we used to have access to that because we can make the sale, but now they're able to go direct. So I think the question I was going to pose to everyone here is, you know, what efforts are you guys making to try to attract those new innovations, bring them into the wholesale fold, and allow that to come through the retail side? Obviously, knowing some of them are on Kickstarter, and those are kind of hard to do that, but what kind of efforts are you guys making to attract those products in the wholesale side to allow us retailers to sell them? And I found my brew, was it the beer bug you said? Mm-hmm. I found mine in a box the other day. It was hidden somewhere.
Staying involved, you know, reading the magazines and seeing what people are doing. You know, I mean, we constantly try to bring out new stuff. And just because that's where a lot of our sales are, you know, I'll be looking at a sales report and, okay, last July was great. Why isn't this July doing the same? Aha, we had a release of a new item there. As far as what we're doing, I mean, it's hard because there's... You know, you don't know what's the winner until it's past tense. So sometimes we got to just put stuff out there. But just, you know, I mean, listening to what the buzz is among homebrewers, if you guys aren't even on, you know, doing social media, Instagram and stuff like that, if you're not doing a shop version, you ought to have your own version and subscribe to everything and see what homebrewers are talking about, because that's going to give you a lot of insight into sort of any new product or any new buzz and trends. But it's a hard game.
I know you look at things like Kickstarter, and it's hard to say, oh, if this comes through Kickstarter, is this going to be something that, you know, we can pick up as distributors? This is just a new way of new product development. Instead of somebody trying to build a product and go bang on a bunch of doors of, you know, to talk to a bunch of people on a board and see if somebody will adopt your product, they're trying to take it, you know, self-fund, get it going. Many of those products don't continue forward. The ones that do, who do establish as companies, oftentimes will at some point look at a distributor model because they realize, okay, Kickstarter was great because you get a lot of visibility, but what do you do after your Kickstarter's over? You still have to reach a market. And if you don't have the assets or a company built around your new idea, your new widget that you Kickstarted, you don't have marketing experience. And you come to companies like ours, all these companies here, we all have, you know, varying numbers of times in this market, but we've been around. You know, LD, you guys are, what, 40 years in? You know, 50? BSG's almost 20, but we're under RAR, which is, what, 172, 173 years of malting, you know, barley. They're going to come at some point, if they want to stay in the market, they're going to go there. They're going to have to look at models where they come straight to us. Amazon, as you all know, at one point or another, is a race to the bottom. And do you want to compete in something where it's a declining profit? So I think that there's always viability for them to come to us and say, hey, you know, we want to reach you guys. You know, we're back to that. You know, we want to reach a culture. So I think we still have that viability.
Yeah, and I think to Chris's point is you don't know what the winner is until it's a winner. I think from a whole standpoint, we would like to have more of those items. A lot of it is out of our control because of Kickstarter, because of people going direct to market, and it's so easy to do now. And, you know, honestly, a lot of these products are made by engineers, and we're not supposed to talk about margin, but they don't understand a wholesale margin, a retail margin. They think we should make a little bit, you should make a little bit. It's not Lowe's, you know. You guys have to make a certain amount of money to pay your rent, pay your employees to run a store. So a lot of these people that develop it don't understand scale. They don't understand distribution. They don't understand that being with one of these companies is going to get them in half the stores in America in a short amount of time, where they're just trying to reach people through the web. So there's challenges with it, but we certainly would like to have more relevant products like that.
And also, just in the overall market,
not even just in home brewing, but in general, you know, there's been a big bubble in e-commerce growth and the direct-to-consumer segment, but there is some slowdown in that, and we are starting to see just a return to the brick and mortar and to the retail, where that is still the highest growth market. The growth in e-commerce last year started, you know, it's actually starting to peak and kind of wane down. So as some of these new, very innovative companies realize, just as they were saying, that they can get a larger market and they can get into retail stores easier through a distributor, I do see that there will be some movement towards the distributor model over time. They're still trying to recoup a lot of their development costs on very new, innovative products. And as that category matures, you'll see those coming into. I mean, we've already brought in a couple products that were, you know, all B2C models, and now they're realizing, hey, we can do better if we go through a distributor and open it up. So I do see that happening and growing back into the market.
And now for something completely different, hops. this hop market, and I had a conversation with somebody that's on the panel, and but I think it needs to be brought up. I don't think we get enough proper knowledge or information from our distributors on the dates of the hops. I know the markets have changed, and we get, as a store, get burnt, I think, by a couple of customers that want to have last year's crops, and then we're selling sometimes 2 or 3 year old hops because we're dependent on what you have in stock. I understand the market's changing, but I think moving forward, just sort of looking back, let's move forward, I think hops should be dated, or what crop they are. I think they should be, we should also be honest with our customers, so we can be honest with our customers. And it's challenging when I, unfortunately, through BSG, had something dated 2016 package, and the guy says, I don't want to buy this. And he pretty much, I lost a customer, and this was 2018. He wants fall crop from the northern hemisphere. He wants the spring crop from the southern hemisphere. So it's important that you, when it's the code dates are kind of funky looking, so you really don't know what they mean. They're good. Their lot dates are great, but we don't know what they actually always mean unless we do our research. We're dependent on you as reaching out to the beginning of the product, that you should be defending yourselves as well as us with to the consumer. I'm just a big believer in information. And I'm dependent, if I'm putting my trust into you to be my major distributor, you know, vendor, bringing it in, you got to help us too, and along those lines. That's just.
No, you're absolutely right. Interestingly, since our whole team is here right now, we've actually, hops is a very high priority discussion right now. I'm the least experienced person at this table in terms of how hop contracting works, because I just started into it back in December. Obviously, you know, BSG does quite a bit of supply to breweries. I kind of went to trial by fire and went, wow, this is it's a cutthroat game, because the demand for hops is so high right now with prevalence of so many new breweries. You have over 7,000 new craft breweries in the United States over the last several years. So we're proactively thinking about what do we need to do to make that shift to take care of our handcraft division, our homebrew market, in terms of freshness, in terms of package, like you had said, package dating and things like that. So keep your eyes open. We're actively assessing what we're going to be doing with this, because it is important and it's relevant.
So actually, related to the previous two, we're going to combine them now. Hops and the wholesale versus direct-to-consumer model. And stop me if I have to be stopped.
Can you talk into the microphone?
Yes, I'm sorry. Combining hops and the wholesale versus direct-to-consumer model. Recently, a large supplier of a certain ingredient has gone to a direct-to-consumer model with an e-commerce website that traditionally we would purchase through our distributors. How are we supposed to react when they're selling to consumers at prices that we can't even buy.
I would say, how are you supposed to react is the same way how are we supposed to react? Because if it's happening to you, it's happening to us. You know, we rely on you guys. It's a genie that's hard to get back in the bottle, and in different producers in different product sectors decide to go direct to consumer at certain times, and some do not. All we can do is keep doing what we do, providing the service and the assortment to you all. But I get it. It's not an easy pill to swallow. Whether it's older hops or current hops. So it's kind of a new world, Rob, that we're all experiencing.
Well, and they're still selling through you guys as well. So I mean, they're in that channel,
right?
You know, so we're still supposed to purchase through you. So it's quite difficult.
The best I would say is that same paradigm is happening across multiple lines and multiple products, and it's a changing landscape for everybody. And the best I could make out of that is the positive view of do what you do best. The shops have advantages that other e-commerce and online platforms don't have. And so going back to building up the community, making friends of your customers, making them want to support you, that's because this is happening along multiple lines. And this is only going to keep happening more and more. And so, you know, again, it's not a throwaway answer, but focus on what you can do in your shop, the service that you provide, the community and the family that you're building, because there's certain things you're not going to be able to outsource, and there's certain things you're not going to be able to win against. And that's just, everybody deals with that challenge in different angles. So look to your strengths. You know, that's what the small fighters do. They turn their weakness into their advantage. Well, you're small. You have a small local contingent of people that have to go to you, that won't ever want to do e-commerce. And so turn those into your soldiers and make the most out of those that you can.
Is it possible, because you're buying, you're selling national, that you could communicate to your shops what's trending so that we don't have stock on our shelves of certain type of grain or certain type of hop? That's, you know, it's not moving, and maybe you should, you know, give us a heads up. This is slowing down, or product, you know, work both ways. I know we all want to sell, but we don't want to have items on our shelves that are not moving or don't think it's, you know, because you see the trend from the nation or national wise, and a little bit more communicating, you know, what you're seeing on more individual items than, you know, as you work with your shops. And what you see is trending up, so you know the guy that we don't necessarily see everything and have it on our shelves so that we all benefit both ways.
Yeah, super important that you know we think about that. If you're looking at what beers are being brewed at your regional craft breweries, it's always a good place to start with seeing that. And always talk to your rep, because we do pay close attention to trends in the market. We're constantly doing this. You know, like right now, the bell of the ball is Nelson. I mean, everybody needs to have Nelson on the show. Everybody wants Nelson. I'm sure in 2 years, Nelson's going to be a secondary hop. There's going to be some other new varietal from somewhere that's going to get people excited. If you think about what Amarillo 2013, everybody was, you know, clamoring for Amarillo, and it was a hard to get. And then suddenly now I got plenty of Amarillo for you. You know how this goes. This is hops are fads, you know, and there's excitement. Just like, you know, I gave the hop talk 2 days ago, and I talked about, you know, how rapidly has IPA changed in just 5 years. You know, we went from weaponized IPAs at 102 IBU to session to hazy to brute. My trivia question for you is, what's going to be the new IPA by Christmas? So we do pay close attention to this. We talk amongst, we talk in our teams constantly of what we're seeing out there. So, yeah, read the magazines. We, you know, BYO and the, you know, Zimmergy and such, they're always keeping up on that too.
And just to build on that point, you know, the communication flows both ways. So, you know, talk to your reps as much as possible. It's we need to hear it from you as well as be able to communicate to you. We need to be able to hear it from you as well as communicate it to you. So just having those conversations as often as possible, staying engaged with your rep basically is the best way to get that flow.
Yeah, let us know when Vic Secret's back. So one other, I guess, request from all of you is that as a shop, we do a lot of pro-am events. And so they're competitions and there's prizes for